on the radio. We got it working. Everything's working, folks. For the first time in many years, they are allowing me to operate with the transmitter turned on. We've got the transmitter on. Everything's working. Oh, this is a day of wonderful portent. This is a day that will go down in infamy. In fact, I could hardly believe it. It started out beautifully. This day, I am in this magnificent men's room of a magnificent, very exclusive, very expensive men's club in New York. And don't ask me how I got there. That was a fluke, too. That's another story. I'm in this men's room, you know, the kind where they got the guy with the white coat, and he hands you a little bar of pink soap and asks for half a dollar, that kind of thing. And I am standing over next to the mirror. And this is a very exclusive men's room, right in the middle of this majestic, magnificent island of dreams, Manhattan, where there is a broken light bulb for every busted ego along poor old benighted Broadway. Anyway, I'm standing up there next to the mirror, and they had this platinum frame. It was beautiful. And I see in tiny letters under this platinum frame in this exclusive men's club in the heart of the establishement, the words, Hen, Flick Lives. Flick Lives. I couldn't believe it. Somewhere in the establishment, there is a spy, a sneaky spy, who is passing for something he ain't. Flick Lives. Oh, why, it's a great day, a great day. Why, we've just begun to fight. We have just begun, just begun. I couldn't believe my eyes. I thought to myself, it's happening everywhere. Every place, things are falling down. And the whole world is beginning to crumble. In fact, nowhere is the world crumbling more quickly than and more totally and thoroughly than it is in Matty Old England. Mysterious things are happening there. For example, did you see the piece that came in just about maybe 6 hours ago on the wire from Whitehall, England? The dinner got off to a large bang, yeah, yesterday. An 18-pound ham, dinner for 30 old-age pensioners, blew out of a pressure cooker, trailing gravy, leaving an 18-inch hole in the ceiling, and finally coming to rest high above in the rafters.
Won't you come on? Come on home, old Bill Bailey. Come on, baby. Won't you come home, Bill Bailey? Won't you come on?
That man finds himself all the time into the ham blowing through the ceiling there, flying right up. Did I ever tell you about the time? In fact, I know I never told this story. One of the great awful... It had caused a fight. Have you ever had a battle with your neighbors? The kind of battle... You know, a few years ago, there was a story out of Jersey. Jersey, naturally. There was a story out of Jersey where this guy... built up. Now, I'm not talking about a fight among kids, you know, kids getting out and fighting and rolling around on the ground. That's not the kind of fight I'm talking about.
I'm talking about a battle family against family. I'm talking about a family fight. Now, the most famous family fight in the history of probably the Western world was the Hatfields and the McCoys. I mean, that's a feud. I mean, you know, that baby went on for 100 years. I guess it's still going on, isn't it, Don? Once in a while, a Hatfield wings a McCoy somewhere up in the hills, and, you know, the old thing keeps going. You just can't forget these things. But we had a fantastic fight with a family one time that lived next door to us for about 6 months, and it was the Bumpus family. Naturally, we would have somebody named Bumpus live next door to us, and there was this crummy, rotten kid named Delbert Bumpus. There are families. There is the raggle tackle gypsy varmint family, and you don't see many of those, I guess, in the East. But all of a sudden, without any warning, the house next door was taken over by about 45 people. They just moved in, and the family that lived there before moved out. The Taylors, they were there briefly. They moved out, and all of a sudden, a truck pulled up, an old rotten, crummy truck. And it was piled high with these old rotten, crummy bed springs, piled high with mattresses with stains all over them, piled high with jugs and all kinds of junk. And within 5 minutes, the wildest, insane crowd of people moved in you ever heard in your life. And I mean heard. Delbert Bumpus had entered the neighborhood. Now, I remember one sight of the Delbert Bumpus family. It's funny, because they were only there 6 months. I only remember just a few brief images. But I remember the old man, the grandpa, standing out on the porch all the time, spitting tobacco juice into our driveway. I don't know whether you have had somebody spit. And this guy, it was reported that this guy had been a painter or something. You know, there were all kinds of myths about. Now, I'm not talking about a painter. I'm talking about a guy that painted houses. And you know how the myths are about painters? For one thing, all painters are drinkers. You've heard that, haven't you, Don? They drink because of the lead in the paint. Oh, yeah, everybody. Now, I can imagine 58,000 guys out there say, that's true. That's not a myth. That's true. And the poor painters, you know, they're all maligned. You know. In fact, one of the squarest guys that I ever knew in my life was a friend of my father's. His name was Selke. He was a house painter, and this guy was not only a deacon in the Presbyterian Church, he taught Sunday school, and he thought knee-high orange was too strong for kids. Nevertheless, the myth persists that painters drink all the time because of the lead in the paint. They drink because they smell that lead all day long, and so the next thing you know, they go staggering out, and they're knocking down the bourbon and yelling and hollering, and they're falling down the stairs. It's because they're painters. It's a, you know, an occupational disease of painters. Well, this may or may not be. I'm not going to argue with you. But there was a rumor out that old Grandpa Bumpus was a retired painter. And because he was a retired painter, he chewed tobacco. Now, don't ask me what the mythology there was involved, but it was believed that the reason that guys chewed tobacco like he did was because painting makes you terribly thirsty. And because you're always thirsty and your throat is desiccated or something, you got to chew tobacco to keep the juices flowing. At least that way. Well, all right, I'm not asking you to believe it. I'm just telling you what everybody believed around there. Listen, I just met a guy the other day from Jersey who really does believe that General Motors has the plans of a car that runs on just a pill. No gas at all. It runs on a pill, but they bought it up, took it off the market because you know how they are. Right? Okay. You were right there when you heard that guy from Jersey. And he goes, you don't think that they'd let that out on the market. You try to tell me that they don't have that. He says, well, am I going to, you know, it was just like a joke. Then the next thing I said to him, I says, yeah, but listen, have you ever heard about that battery that they got that never wears out? He says, yeah, oh, boy, that battery. Listen, I met a guy the other day in the Pigeon. I met a guy in the Penguin Club. And over here in Clifton, and we're sitting there, and he says, you know that guy had a cousin who knew a guy in Elyria, Ohio, who invented that battery. Now, that battery lasts forever. It's a battery that's guaranteed to last longer than a car. They bought it up. You know that they sent that guy down to South America, and they bought up that battery for $50,000 and told him that part of the contract was he could never come back into the States and could never make another battery. You don't mean to tell me that they'd let that out, do you? Well, there I was running against the old myth again. They are contriving to do me in. Well, I'm not going to argue about that myth, but I'm going to tell you this, that old Grandpa Bumpus would come out on that porch and he would go, "Toy." This son of a gun, against the wind, Don, I've seen some spitters in my time. Against the wind, this guy could lay out a gob about the size, I would say about the size of a golf ball, maybe 40 yards against the wind, loaded with mail pouch tobacco. Toy. And he just let, and where did he put it? The middle of our driveway. The middle of our driveway. Well, after about 3 weeks of this, you know, the driveway is getting a little gamey. Because this guy not only did this all day long, he did it all night long. Apparently they never slept. And then all night long, you would hear from next door, the radio turned full up, you would hear Gene Autry. Gene Autry singing, "Red Sails in the Sunset," through his nose. Now, I don't know whether or not you've been subjected. I saw a movie the other day. They were talking about brainwashing, evil brainwashing. Did you see the one when William Holden was the victim of brainwashing? He had been captured by the Korean communists, and now, you know, his mind was addled. The best form of brainwashing I know is to strap a guy in a room 40 feet away from a bunch of hillbillies who are playing all night long the same Gene Autry record on their record player, a wind-up Sears Roebuck model. "Red Sails in the Sunset." And once in a while, they would intersperse it with Gene Autry singing, "Silver Threads Among the Gold." Ooh, "Silver Threads Among the Gold," "Red Sails in the Sunset." 3 o'clock in the morning, you'd hear the Bumpus family playing this crummy, rotten record. And then it happened. It happened. There is always, when two major powers run on a collision course, there is always one incident that neither one of the major powers can predict is about to occur. It is called the fatal or the cataclysmic, and I put quote marks around this in capital letters, the cataclysmic accident. We will tell you that and give you the story of the cataclysmic accident in just a moment. But first, friend, never have I known. One night, now that I think back on the Bumpus family, I think of all these fantastic things that came out in that 1 6-week period. Did I ever tell you about the time old man Bumpus, his name was Emil, I remember, now it's coming back, Emil Bumpus, who always wore, he wore these very faded, you know, the kind of overalls that had the cross things in the back? And it says Big Yank or Headlight or Searchlight or something on the back. He always went with a red bandana sticking out of the back pocket. And these guys were right out of Hazard, Kentucky. And old Emil Bumpus one time got a snootful of white lightning, which apparently they were making in the basement. And Emil Bumpus came out into the back porch, and he was yelling at somebody in the house with this deep southern anger. Like, "You ain't... Who are you think you're talking to? I am not going to go." And with that, he grabbed a hold of the back porch and pulled it right off the house. Now, you see that happen, man, and you know that you're with a crowd of Neanderthal men. Emil Bumpus grabbed the back. They had one of these little wooden square back porches. It's like the whole back porch, and it had a little roof on it, the whole bit. He grabbed a hold of it and went, crash. And from that day on, the Bumpus house had no back porch, just a door about 8 feet up in the air. And once in a while, one of them would jump out. You know, occasionally, one of the tall, skinny sisters, they had these tall, skinny sisters who wore these long, skinny dresses, you know, real hillbillies, and they were always wearing tennis shoes. Once in a while, one of them would fall out. They forgot, you know, that the back porch would fall out. And another thing the Bumpus family did, have you ever had a family that was a complete slob family? Now I'm thinking back on it. Another thing they used to do was about every 5 minutes, they were throwing coffee grounds out the back window into the yard. They just threw them out the window. And my mother was just standing there next to the sink, you know, and she looks right out into the Bumpus house. They're right across the driveway from us. And I can remember my mother saying, "Oh, look at those slobs." And you'd hear the coffee grounds go all out. Oh, the potato peelings would come flying out and go skidding across the driveway. And then the day came and it happened. I will never forget this. I'm a kid, you know. I guess I was about 7 or 8. And the Bumpus family was just kind of this great, mysterious, wild, howling mob next door, yelling and hollering. And I didn't even understand things like drinking and all that stuff. Have you ever heard of the Jodes and the Kallikaks, the Jukes and the Kallikaks? You have heard of the Jukes and the Kallikaks? Well, they tell me that this was the poor relatives to the Kallikaks. If you can imagine, they were so far down the evolutionary totem pole that they didn't even get written about. They were so far down the family tree. They had inbred, ingrown. I understand they had webbed feet. There was a rumor around that they only had 3 toes. And, you know, the whole, oh, sure, they were right out of the Kentucky Hills. And they're throwing the garbage out all the time. And they had this old Buick. Old, rotten blue Buick. And it had tires hooked down with ropes and that kind of stuff. The old man is always bugging. You know, he was meticulous about his car. And there they were, right in the middle of the neighborhood. The Bumpus family, raising hell, hollering and yelling. Delbert Bumpus. Now, I'm going to tell you about Delbert Bumpus. Delbert Bumpus was about 8. He was about, he didn't go to school, first of all. He went about 3 days a month, you know. And whenever he'd go to school, there'd be a lot of yelling. They'd throw him out, the whole bit. He was always getting in fights and all that. But Delbert Bumpus was about 8, and he chewed tobacco. I'm not making it up. Well, the whole neighborhood was, you know, up in arms about the Bumpus family. And then the day... Oh, another thing. And this is important to the story. They had at least 745 dogs. Now, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is with that type of... I mean, you know, they're the kind of people that have 42 kids and then adopt 8 other ones. You know, that kind of thing. And kids and dogs. And there must have been... And they were always sleeping under the porch, these dogs. And by the way, they were the most uninhibited dogs you ever saw in your life. These dogs had no sense of privacy. They did everything in the bright sunlight. I mean everything. And they were all the great, moiling mass of dogs. And I remember once in a while you'd see one of the Delbert Bumpus women. There was about 9 women. Nobody knew their names. And these the Bumpus. One of the women would come out with an apron. She's got the apple cores, or she's got bones or something, and she would walk through the yard, and around her would be a cloud of these blue tick hounds. There were all these long, skinny hounds, and smelly, I'll tell you, you never smelled these dogs. It was incredible. You could almost see the smell. On a nice, warm summer day, there was kind of a green, yellowish haze that hung over the Bumpus house, and the haze itself had fleas. I mean, fleas scratching. The whole bit. The family's always scratching. And these dogs are under the porch. And they're in the backyard. They're digging holes. They're under... And about 5 of them took up residence under our garage. They dug a hole under the garage. They're sleeping under the garage. And every time the old man would drive the car in, he'd drive the car in the garage, had a concrete floor. You'd hear under the floor, oh, 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 oh. They're yapping under the... Ooh, don't make it out. And they'd run around the garage. Get out, get out. Shoo, shoo, get out. Get out, get out, get out. And you'd see the eyes of the Bumpus family peering out. You know, you didn't, you know, they were a real hillbilly family. Man, you can say anything you want, but you don't say anything against their dogs. You do not say anything against Old Blue. By the way, all the dogs were named either Big Red or Old Blue. There must have been 500 of them saying, oh, yeah, oh, 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 oh. And then when the moon would get full, I don't know, friends, whether you have ever lived next to a house that had 745 dogs all sitting out in the backyard next to the garage going, oh, 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 and all of it interspersed with Gene Autry singing, Red Sails in the Sunset, how loud it is, shuck, doing, 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 oh, oh, oh. Ooh, My mother, I can remember her standing next to the sink with all of her... You could just see her hair curlers standing up in indignation, like little antennas standing up looking out at the back. Oh, 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 red sails in the sunset. And then the day it happened. Now, I don't want you to get the idea that all the dogs that the Bumpus family had were alike. As a matter of fact, they all seemed to be long, skinny, blue tick type hounds. They were just a great motley herd of dogs. Some were little short, fat dogs that were white with gray ears and yellow teeth. Some were very long, smelly dogs that had long hair with stickers in it. But they had thousands of dogs of all types. But the whole general type was this long, skinny hound with the tongue. They had more tongues. Their tongues hung out like 3 feet all the time. They're walking around, their eyeballs hanging down. And it was right. You could just see Rod Steiger in the middle of that crowd. You know, he fitted right in there. They were all Rod Steiger and a yard wide, the whole bit. Well, one day it happened. This is when it hit the fan. Now, my mother and father, you know, they were just ordinary type people. The old man would flip his cork once in a while when the furnace would go out. He'd threaten to blow out his brains when the White Sox traded away the only ball player they had, that kind of stuff. But ordinarily, he never got up, you know, threw rocks at people's houses and that kind of stuff. Until this fantastic day, my old man was totally ape for ham. Now, that story of that ham blowing out through the top of the ceiling there reminded me about the old man's hang-up on ham. He loved ham. I mean, great big smoked hams. And about every 3 or 4 months, about 3 times a year, we would make a major food investment. Now, I suppose rich families don't even think about this kind of thing, but ordinary-type families go through their lives and they have special things that are important things, like to buy a turkey. Now, you know what I mean, Don. That's a big event. You know, they go and buy this big thing. They argue and they look at all the turkeys and they discuss it and they press the breastbone down and they wiggle the legs. And to finally they decide on this 12-pound turkey, and that's a major event. And they bring it home, and for weeks afterwards, they talk about this turkey. It was a very good turkey, very special turkey. That was almost like the turkey we had, it was in 63 we had a turkey like that. That's a very good turkey. But it wasn't quite as good as the turkey we had in 59. Do you remember that turkey? These are very big events. Now, there were 3 types of things that were big events. Turkeys and chickens. That was a mega. About twice a year, we'd have a turkey or a chicken, something like that. Thanksgiving, maybe. Christmas, maybe, something like that. Turkey, chicken. Another gigantic event was when we would get this big pork roast. A big pork roast. And it would last for about 10 days. Big pork roast. That was another big event. Because ordinarily, you know, we lived in the life of corned beef hash. Broadcast corned beef hash. That was our daily fare. Meatloaf. Hamburgers. Meatballs. Spaghetti, you know, and that kind of stuff. That's ordinary food, you know. And the Wonder Bread on the table, the whole stick, that was about it. Once in a great while, there would be a big weekend shopping thing. We would go down to the A&P, and it would be my dad. I remember it would be usually like a Friday night. He'd say, I'll tell you what, let's do. What do you say? What do you say we all get together, we all go out to the A&P tomorrow, and what do you say we got a great big ham? Well, that meant like half the old man's paycheck for that week. What do you say we get a ham? My mother would say, well, I don't know. Can we afford it this month? Oh, come on. What the hell? You only live once. What do you say we get a ham, huh? And then we can have pea soup. And his eyes would get, you know, the ham. He could just see this ham. And so we would go to the A&P, and they'd have all these hams laid out. They know, with the white paper on them, you know, the white with the... I've always had this feeling, the Swift, big red diamond on a Swift, white smoked hams. And they would be hanging up back there. And the old man would go up and down, and he'd look at the hams, and he'd poke them. My mother would poke and look at it. And that night, we would go home with about 3 big bags of groceries, about 18 cans of Van Camp pork and beans, 74 cans of Campbell's tomato soup. This is our food for the week. Four loaves of Wonder Bread, a half dozen of the extra small brown eggs, a 2-pound jar of El Cheapo peanut butter, a 2.5-pound thing of coffee, old battery acid coffee grown in the mountains of East Chicago, especially ground for the kind of pots we use, boiling water over and over again, reusable grounds, fig bars. Those were the cookies. We'd have a 2-pound bag of fig bars, a big thing with the cellophane on the top of fig bars. You know, good solid. A 17-pound can of oatmeal, two boxes of cream of wheat. This is the kind of stuff. But the ham. H-A-M. The ham. And that ham was the center of one of the great disasters that happened to our family ever. Absolutely ever. Now, when my mother got a ham, she would take this ham. She had a big blue pan, great big pan that she made turkeys in. And the first thing she would do, she would put the ham on the stove. I remember how she used to do it. It was a great ritual in the family. She would take the ham out, and she would strip off this white paper that came in with all the little red string and everything. And she'd look at it, and the old man would look at it. And then they would cut off that, it had sort of a skin on it. So it's this dark smoke skin. He cut that off, and there's the ham. And then she would put it on the stove, on top of the stove, in boiling water. She would boil this for about 2 hours in the whole house. After about a half an hour of this, you could smell this smoked ham. Oh, wow, yeah. It was fantastic, a smoked ham. I'm outside playing second base, and I could smell that smoked ham drifting. The whole neighborhood knew the Shepherds had ham this week, and a big thing. And then she would take it off the oven, pour off the water, you see, and save the water, because out of that water, she would make some of the most magnificent pea soup that the taste of man has ever. I mean, it was like sheer magic. And she would save that water. You've had this. I'm sure you have done. She'd save the water, see. And then she would take the ham and put it into this big blue pan. And she would put on it brown sugar. And she would stick cloves all over it. And then she would take sliced Del Monte pineapple. She'd put the pineapple all over it with little maraschino cherries. And then she would sprinkle more brown sugar on it. She'd put a little molasses on it. And a little salt, a little pepper. And then she would shove it into the oven. And instantly, this brown sugar would melt all over it. And it would mingle with the ham juice. You'd smell this. And the pineapple would begin to cook away there. Well, she would cook this in the oven. She would roast it or bake it or whatever they call it. Baked it, I guess. That's called baking it, isn't it? She would bake this baby for hours. Just like that. On a Saturday night, she is preparing it for Sunday dinner. And she would bake it. And then she would leave it in the oven. She wouldn't take it out. She'd turn off the oven. It's now baked, see? And she had this thing. She always said, never eat a baked ham immediately after it's baked. Let it sit in the oven for 12 hours. Have you ever heard that? Before you cut it. Yeah, because then it's real solid, see? So then she turns off the oven. And boy, all night long, I'm in my bedroom and I could smell that ham. Oh, we're going to have ham. You know, the old man's going to be in a fantastic mood today. See, ham, you know. Oh, yeah, he'll play catch with us and the whole bit. See, ham, oh, he loves us. You know, he'll talk to us instead of hitting my brother, you know. Boy, I smell the ham. The old man is sleeping the sleep of the just, the sleep of the man who is about to enjoy a ham dinner on Sunday. You'd hear him in the next, you know, in the next room. And sure enough, 7 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock, we're up. And the ham goes back in the oven to be heated very slowly under a very, very low flame. Very low. And by 2 o'clock that afternoon, we are out of our skull. Out of our bird with this ham. You could smell the ham in the drapes. You could smell it down in the basement mingled with the coal in the coal bin. You could smell that ham maybe 2 or 3 blocks away. And with the ham then, at the last minute, maybe the last half hour, my mother would stick sweet potatoes. She would stick them down there around the ham. There were a little butter on them. And the sweet potatoes would bake in the ham. Come butter. You got it? Kampala, Jesu. Once again, the old basic man begins to crap out, and the ham would be heated. And then, finally, and remember, this is very important in the ham world, finally, she would take the ham out. You don't eat the ham when it's, you know, right out of the oven, ever. She would pull the ham out of the oven, and she would set it up there on the kitchen table. And whenever we had ham, we ate in the dining room, as opposed to eating in the kitchen, which is where we always ate. And she would take this ham, and she would lay it down and put it on it. She'd take this tinfoil wrap, and she had a big sheet of it, and she would put the ham right in the middle of the table, right in the middle of the kitchen table, and there the ham would sit with juice running off of it, and she would run that tinfoil up a little bit to catch it, see, and that is, it's slowly cooling. Oh, what a magnificent picture. The ham right there. And then out in the next room, she'd put the tablecloth down, and she'd put all the best china out. We're going to have ham today. She'd have this big platter that we always use, only for ham. And we had this thing that they had apparently gotten for their wedding gift, you know. It was like the only family heirloom we had, called the carving set. And the carving set was in this long, sort of dark red cardboard box, you know, kind of a fancy cardboard box, and it was lined with red felt. You know those things? With the kind of outline of this big fork and this big knife, and the old man would take this out, and for about 2 hours before the ham was to be served, he had this knife sharpener. He's going whoosh, 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 whoosh. He's sharpening the knife, you know, whoosh, whoosh, the carving knife. And by the way, this carving knife was made out of elk horn. You know the elk horn, the antler horn with the brown, and on the end it had a big silver ring. And he's going whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. He's sharpening the knife. And then he takes it, holds it up to the light, and he takes this cloth. And he goes, he cleans off the edge. And then he holds it up and he goes, and then he takes a piece of paper and he goes, cuts the paper off. What a cutter. What a toad sticker. A few extra licks. And then he puts it back in a box. And now it's out there on the dining room table, ready for action. A big carving knife, his big carving fork with the elk horn handle. And the old man now goes into the living room and sits down. You can just see him. His eyes are glowing with anticipation, with the primal lust of a man about to dig into a 15-pound ham that's going to last for a good 2 weeks. We're going to have ham gravy. We're going to have ham sandwiches. We're going to have pea soup. We're going to have, we're just going to have it all, you know, the whole bit. We're going to have ham, 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 all kinds of ham. We're going to have ham hash. We're going to have, yeah, have you ever taken ham and chopped it all up and put it in mayonnaise with pickles? You know, we're going to have ham salad. Oh, ham, you know. Our world is going to be based on this ham for the next 2 weeks. And then we're going to have this gigantic ham bone, which my mother would throw into the pot and make it a soup, the whole bit. Ham, there it is, out on the table. The old man is in, and I remember I was there. I saw the whole thing happen. And I'm sorry, I was right on hand. He's in the living room. He is reading the Chicago Sunday Tribune. He is getting the latest word from Colonel Robert R. McCormick, one of the great thinkers of the era. He has already gotten the bad news about the White Sox, and now he's sitting there surrounded by the Chicago Tribune. And the ham is out in the kitchen, slowly, slowly cooling. And filling the atmosphere with the most heavenly, most magnificent perfume that the nose of man has ever sniffed. I have been called in to wash because, you know, big Sunday dinner. And I'm in there washing, see. I am just coming out of the john. My mother is in the bedroom. She is taking her hair down. She is getting dressed. We're going to have Sunday dinner. You know, it's going to be a big thing. And my Aunt Glenn is coming over. And Uncle Tom. And Uncle Tom was my bootlegger uncle. And Uncle Tom always gave me a dollar. And it was a fantastic day. I was getting a dollar and a ham, the whole bit. And my mother's getting dressed. My kid brother is under the daybed whining. He's just getting ready. I come out of the john, which was right off the kitchen. There was a little, kind of a little jogging hall. You came out, bedrooms were up. You come into the kitchen. To the right is the living room and the dining room. And to your left is the kitchen. I just came out. I just cleared the wall of the kitchen when all of a sudden, the kitchen door goes, boom, slams open,
The door was open, just a little crack, to allow cool air to come in there to cool the ham. Boom! The door slams open, and 4,922 blue tick bumpus hounds come running in. They came in a great big mob, and the leading one, that looked just like a gorilla, had big red teeth, had these great big yellow eyes, grabbed a hold of that ham. Ow, 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 ow! And out they went. Out they went. Pow! Out they went. Holy smokes! The old man jumped up. He said, "The ham! The ham! Those damn dogs! The ham!" And my mother practically passed out in the ledge. Oh, oh, the ham! The ham! My kid brother stopped whining. I ran through the kitchen and out on the back porch, and there, out next to the garage, there were 422 dogs. Oh, 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 oh. The ham. That ham did not last 8.5 seconds with those ravening, insane bumpus hounds. Yapping and hollering. And old man Bumpus, Grandpa Bumpus, came out on the back porch to hear what all the yapping was about. He spits a great big gob of tobacco juice right in the middle of the pack, right on our ham. Boy. And he sees what's going on. They got our Sunday ham, and that old clown starts to laugh. He starts to laugh. Well, the old man sees that. The old man sees that. The old man sees that, and he's out on the back porch. He sees old Grandpa Bumpus laughing his gut out. Amo Bumpus comes out with a snoot full of white lightning. He takes one look at this thing, and he starts to laugh. The dogs are going, "Oh, oh, 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 oh!" They are going out of their skull. You know, they've made the kill. And all surrounding the whole thing, you could hear the sound. You could hear the sound of red sears in the sun. Oh, the old man flips. The old man blew his stack. He stands out on the back porch. I have never seen the old man do anything like this. He reaches down, and we had a whole long string of beer bottles on the back porch. He takes one of those beer bottles up. He throws that beer bottle up against the side of the Bumpus house, and it goes crash! Old Grandpa Bumpus stopped in mid-spit with a big gob hanging over his chin. Well, Emil Bumpus, he saw the beginning. This was back home for Emil. Emil had fought feuds all of his life. Emil was in his element. Emil turns around to make like he's going to get the shotgun. And the old man just stood there, white as a sheet, radiating, radiating. The most clear, beautiful anger I've ever seen in my... I'm cowering now. And even the dogs out there are quiet. You know, the bone is laying there. A couple of them are licking their chops. And the old man turns and he walks back into the kitchen. He stands for a minute by the kitchen sink. And he looks over. And there is that great big sheet of Reynolds wrap. Filled with ham gravy. He looks at it. You could smell the ham. It was coming out of the stove. It was coming out of the drapes. Was coming out of the towels in the bathroom. You could smell ham everywhere. The old man looks at it. White. He says, "I'm damn Bumpuses." All right. It's okay. All right. Get on your coats. We're going to the Chinese joint. Get on your coats. We're having chop suey. Get on your coats. We're going to have egg foo-young. That, by the way, if any of you ever lived in a family like that, when you went out to the Chinese restaurant, have chop suey and egg foo young, this was a gala of the highest order. The old man was in effect saying, "All right, take my ham, try to get my egg foo young, you barbarians. All right, get dressed, we're going out. Get dressed." And 5 minutes later, we're in the Oldsmobile, not saying a word. Driving down Cleveland Street, heading towards the Chinese joint, soy sauce, egg foo young, fried rice, and egg rolls. Well, from time to time, that ham was mentioned in the family. but only among lesser members of the family. It was never mentioned around the old man. And from that time on, the old man waged a continuous guerrilla war against the Bumpus family. And you know how he did it? Bottle caps in the driveway so that the Bumpus Buick would find interesting things happening to its tires. He was, the list of calumny goes on and on and on. And then one benighted, blessed, unbelievably great day, the Bumpus family moved out. Moved right out, lock, stock, and barrel, in the middle of the night, and left 6 months of unpaid rent. And that was one of the few days that I ever heard the old man sing out loud while he shaved.